Ulterior.
There is a tweet that I bookmarked last week for the intention of reading it on air for the intro, because this tweet is one of the goddamn funniest things I've read this year. So y'all know the Sydney Sweeney bathwater soap thing type shit, whatever it is. Somebody tweeted in response to that, Belle Delphine is Oppenheimer. And I could not fucking contain myself. I could not stop laughing. That shit took me the fuck out, dog. I've had like two people ask me if I'm gonna buy the Sydney Sweeney bathwater. Listen, man, what happens with my money is between me and God, all right? Don't you worry about it. Also, on the subject of other Euphoria stars, the stuff about Hunter Schafer potentially being cast as Zelda, if that makes you upset in any way, cry, 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 you little fucking bitch. Fuck transphobia. Happy Pride Month, y'all. Let's get into an episode now. We got brand new singles by likes of Thousand Below, Fit for a King, The Amity Affliction, a few others I want to mention, and then brand new records by Wolves at the Gate, and what ended up being the final album to ever be released by Stray from the Path. Thank you guys so much for tapping in, and I really hope y'all enjoyed this episode. I'm going to keep it a buck, y'all. I am recording this part of the episode on Thursday, June 5th, the day that the episode is being released, as a means of having this intro with the news updates be current and up to date and relevant. And there has been a lot going on today, man. The Switch 2 just released. I am going to wait it out a little bit, but if you got a Switch 2 and you got Mario Kart and all that good shit, congratulations, and hope y'all enjoy that stuff. Aaron Rodgers will be officially going to the Pittsburgh Steelers on a one-year deal. The week one match for the Steelers is against the Jets, so literally Aaron Rodgers and Justin Fields just swapping teams, and it is going to be quite fucking nasty when Aaron Rodgers loses that opener to Justin Fields and the Jets. The other thing is Elon Musk and Donald Trump are doing their thing right now on Twitter. Elon is... he's fucking wilding right now, man. Fuck that guy, but this is like quite entertaining, you know what I mean? Anyways, yeah, let's get into the essentially why this whole podcast exists, which is the fucking music. There is a brand new single out by Thousand Below and the announcement of a brand new album to accompany all that. We have Palace of Dread. The album is called Buried in Jade. It will be released on August 8th. And when I listened to Palace of Dread, I started to have this one thought in my head kind of circulate my thoughts about Thousand Below. And it's kind of been a constant ever since then. This right now sounds like a band who is very confident that they have just written the best material of their careers. And I think when I look at the trajectory of the singles rollout so far, all the way back to Shake and Wrong Again last year, and then now Palace of Dread, Thousand Below is on a stretch of consistency that they've always been like very capable of having. And I think they have had consistent stretches of singles in the past with every album rollout. But right now, they feel like they are on top of their game in a way that I always thought they were, but now I'm realizing like, oh shit, there was indeed another level for this band to rise to the occasion for, and they have more than done that now. Palace of Dread is like heavy at the right moments. It has the proper kind of like blissful nature to its chorus and James' voice and how that all contrasts the very like demonic sounding lows that this guy projects later on in the track Palace of Dread, it feels like, I said, guys, like the real statement on where Thousand Below is right now and where they are going to be after Buried in Jade drops. And I have these incredibly high expectations for the album, and given the track record of Thousand Below when it comes to nailing this stuff down, I have zero fucking doubt in my mind whatsoever that this band will indeed deliver the best body of work that we have ever heard out of Thousand Below. There is a brand new single out by The Ward Alive. It is called Eyes Above. I was quite taken aback by this song, not in the sense of like being surprised that a Ward Alive song was good, because I feel like I've detailed enough times on this show before about my adoration for the Ward Alive and how much I truly love this band and how they've kind of been like a constant in my rotation for the last 16 years now. Holy shit, it's been 16 years since Empire, hasn't it? Damn, I've been listening to this band for like more than half my life. Fuck, that's crazy, dude. And what I said about, you know, me listening to this band for like that long, I think it's allowed me to take a song like Eyes Above and really putting it into perspective, because it feels like the biggest bridge that the Ward Alive has ever had between their older sound and their newer sound. Eyes Above has a lot going for it that I feel like really taps into what this band was doing on Deceiver and Life Cycles, but it has the like the production elements that you would find on like Hard Reset or Monomania, you know, like that more current, updated sound. That's the kind of filter that I really get out of Eyes Above. I think it is one of the like freshest and most energetic takes that this band has had on their own sound in recent years. And again, I say that having been an enormous fan of Hard Reset, but Eyes Above, it's fast paced, it's raw, it's aggressive, it's beautiful at times. It's one of the like most cumulative songs I've ever heard out of the Ward Alive, and it does a world of wonders in making me even more excited for the future of this band. It's a very exciting time right now for the camp of Fit for a King. Let's get into the brand new single of theirs, Lonely God. And just like with Thousand Below earlier, this was also part of an album announcement. Fit for a King will be releasing the album Lonely God on August 1st, which will be their first album since 2022's The Hell We Create. So, you know, there's almost a 3-year gap between Lonely God and The Hell We Create. And I think within that time, Fit for a King and the consistent stretches of touring that they've been doing, they've had the time to like further refine their sound. Not that it needed refining necessarily, but you know, it's always like rewarding as a fan of a band to see them like really be locked in and really be delivering on a sound that they're great at. And I think that's what this song here, Lonely God, does. I admittedly am somebody who probably favors the melodic side of Fit for a King more so than the heavier side. But when hearing a song like Lonely God, it starts to really feel like a 1A, 1B type thing with these two sounds that the band has. Lonely God is just fucking ferocious and heavy all the way through. I think Ryan Kirby has like some of the most standout moments of his career as a screamer. It's just like so apoplectic, like the energy that is put into Lonely God. And it has, you know, kind of like a bit of the classic Fit for a King sound with like just, you know, the right amount of more like recent touches of the band's ideas and like their whole identity that allows Lonely God to, you know, feel so monstrous and feel like it is the proper way for the band to move forward into this new era of theirs. I think Lonely God already sets the stage for probably one of the most anticipated records of the year, and it's a record that I cannot wait to get into when it's out in a couple months, and I will be right here ready to just be so like praising of the album and tell you guys why I think Fit for a King is like truly one of the legends of our scene in recent years. The final single that I will go into detail on for the episode, it comes from The Amity Affliction in a new iteration of the band, and I'll explain more about that in a second. The new single is called All That I Remember. So when I say that this is like a new iteration of the band, I mean that All That I Remember is the first single to be released post Aaron Stringer leaving the band in a quite messy way. We'll phrase it like that for now. In his spot now as the clean vocalist of The Amity Affliction is Johnny Reeves from Kingdom of Giants, and right away, I think his voice in terms of like being the new counterpart to Joel's screams, it works out really, really well right from the jump. I think Johnny brings like this fresh air, fresh intensity to what Amity is doing, and it's done in a way where the song still shockingly feels like The Amity Affliction. And I say shockingly because for myself as a listener of this band, it was always Aaron's voice that like my very first thought was whenever I would just hear the name of The Amity Affliction. And so losing that element, I didn't know what the future of this band looked like or what it would sound like, and it actually looks and sounds like really, really strong with Johnny in this spot. I think it has the right vibe for Amity, and like the riffage, the production, like the raw and anguished vibe that it gives off. All That I Remember, beyond anything else, I really think that it makes it clear that there is indeed a future for The Amity Affliction, and I am very much so looking forward to getting to kind of, you know, unravel the remainder of that through the rest of time. These were the remaining singles from last week that I gave either a 4 or a 5 to in the reviews for social media: The Exchange by Everyone Dies in Utah, Brain Rot by Grandson, Portraits Keep Dreaming, by Hell Can Wait, Sugarcoat by In Her Own Words, Not Eternal by Keep Close, Vessel of Rot by Killstreak, Dokonuma by Gnosis, Friendly Fire by Lost Trees, Second Place by Palmas, Euphoria by Royal and the Serpent, A Darker Path by Royal Hearts, Misfire by Siphon, Vivid by Strayview, Petty Fuck by 1056, and Death Sentence by The New Violence. The only single that scored below a 4 was Afterlife by Awaken I Am. I love Awaken I Am. I just kind of feel like the production on Afterlife, it doesn't really do the song too much justice. It's still fine for what it is, but I feel like this was not the strongest movement for the band. And that's kind of where I stand on that right now, and that's where I stood on all the singles. A really solid week altogether. Like, again, some incredible heavy hitters with, like, Thousand Below, The Word Alive, Amity, Fit for a King. And I'm going to extend that same notion. Can you guys hear the landscaping that's happening outside my apartment right now? I think some of it might get cut out in like post-production, but if there's any like background noise that picks up in the microphone, I do apologize. What happens if I just tell them to shut the fuck up real quick? Shut the fuck up! I don't think that worked. Anyways, we're going to get into the two records for the episode now. The first of which is by a band that I have mentioned before on this show, and I've kind of outlined my history with them, so I won't go like too in detail on that, but I will still touch upon my personal connection to Wolves at the Gate as we look at their brand new album called Wasteland. Something that stood out to me when listening to this album was the realization that this is only the sixth album ever released by Wolves at the Gate, and I guess because this band has been around since like 2008, 2007, somewhere around that time frame, it would just like naturally feel to me like, okay, this band must be on like their ninth or tenth record right now. No, it's their sixth. And I think it works to the advantage of Wolves at the Gate that their discography in terms of quantity is like kind of compact, because then it makes it a lot easier for myself to be able to look at Wasteland and like really see the evolution of this band's sound and exactly where they have been since 2008. When I say like I have kind of a history with Wolves at the Gate, I really just mean that they are a band who I discovered through like a random Pandora station, and it was Oh the Depths, which is from the EP We Are the Ones, and that song like really, really opened my eyes to Wolves at the Gate and ensured that they would be a band who I just like, you know, casually followed for the next couple of years, and evidently so, because here I am 14 years after the fact, and I'm still talking about them to you guys. And I will also say this about Wolves at the Gate, because it's a big part of their identity and who they are as a band, who they are as people, and it's super evident in the lyricism of their music. This is a Christian band, and like pretty heavily Christian, I will say that. I do not feel like it has ever been like super like preachy or in your face when it comes to them, you know, expressing their beliefs and like their attachment to their faith through their music. It's always just been more so like a journey and like a collection of tales about how their lives are impacted by their beliefs, and not necessarily like, you know, telling you as a listener to do this thing, follow this thing, believe in this thing. It's just more of like self-expression, and I really do appreciate that. And you know, even as somebody who, when I discovered this band, I didn't really know about like my own religious beliefs, and then since then I've kind of like evolved, and I would say that now I am a religious man. I've never really like turned to this band for that reason. I've just been able to connect with Wolves at the Gate out of just a sheer appreciation for their sound and what they've been doing. And Wasteland, I feel like this being more conceptual in its narrative, it allows for this like new side of the band to be explored. And you know, for us to be able to get that again, what, 17 years now into their tenure, I think that's really, really special. And when I say the album is more conceptual, that's both a good and a bad thing. I just outlined why it's a good thing. The reason why it might, you know, sometimes be like a bit of a downer of a note to me is because it does use interludes in terms of like separating narratives and stories in this album. And so you have Wandering, Withering, Wasting, and Wanting, and then even the intro song, which is literally called Intro, all being as like kind of the breaks in the story. It does create for some dead air moments, and it does in some minor ways hinder the flow of the album. And a good example in my mind would be Smoke, False Devils, Death Clock, and Memento Mori. Those are my three favorite songs on the album, and that would be an insane back-to-back-to-back stretch on this record. but it's not actually back to back to back. There are interludes that separate all three of those songs, and it just feels like the momentum and the energy that is built up in those tracks, it does kind of derail itself because of these breaks. I probably would have appreciated this album much, much more if those three songs were just in a consistent stretch rather than, you know, kind of being broken up by interludes. But at the same time, I guess it's also like one of those things where, you know, you have to take the good with the bad when it comes to this being a concept album. I do enjoy the story that's being told here. The story is, you know, kind of, I would say, a little bit generic in its like synopsis, which is basically just about like battling inner demons and like the concept of sin and, you know, self turmoil through these 13 songs. And okay, when I say that, it probably doesn't sound like too exciting, but then once you actually get into the record itself and you hear the way that this is expressed by Wolves at the Gate, there is a lot in terms of layering and depth to what Wasteland is doing and what it is achieving. And again, some of these songs are, you know, maybe some of the best in the entire catalog of Wolves at the Gate. I mentioned Smoke False Devils earlier. As of right now, that is my favorite song on the album, and it was the kind of song that like really just started to like speak to my heart and my soul at the halfway point of this record. And by the time I got through that song, I was like, you know what, I've probably been like a little bit harsh when it comes to the way that I was reviewing the singles heading into this album, because I think on their own, the singles didn't really do a ton for me. They were fine, if not even good, but they just, I guess in some ways I felt like I know what this band sounds like when they're at the top of their game. Like, take Lights and Fire, which was a song off of, okay, I'm gonna say Eulogies. I want to say that's the name of the 2022 album. I'm gonna check that right quick just because I don't want to get that wrong. And if I did get it wrong, I would like to correct myself on that. Eulogies. Yeah, Eulogies. Lights and Fire was like one of my favorite songs of 2022. I think it was somewhere within like the top 35 or 30 range. If not, it probably should have been. And I'm using that song as the example because it's the most recent one I have of like me listening to Wolves at the Gate and thinking like, this band really just fucking delivered like one of the best songs that I've heard in recent memory. And coming into this album, because of the singles rollout, I didn't know if I was going to get that feeling again, but I did get it, not just on Smoke False Devils, but also on Memento Mori. And the way that Memento Mori like slowed itself down and allowed itself to become like so atmospheric and emotional, and in some ways that does end up kind of being like the perfect contrast to the first half of this record that feels like it has more of a like a tight-knit focus on the heavier elements of the band. And then when that second half comes in, that is where I felt like Wasteland was like really starting to like settle in and become an integral part of this band's discography and their legacy and their tenure altogether. Wasteland, in my mind, it over-delivered, even if, like, you know, the things that I mentioned about the interludes, it does bother me, and it's probably always going to bother me when I go back and listen to this album from start to finish. Wasteland still ended up being an album that I was very proud to have listened to, and I think all in all, I feel very silly in the end to have cast any kind of like doubt or hesitancy over the name of Wolves at the Gate, because they prove themselves time and time again to be like really locked in and so like poetic in terms of the style that they project and the narratives they get across. Wasteland is truly a special album by a special band. And again, I really dislike the fact that I ever doubted that could be the case. And so now we get into the final album for the episode, and subsequently, it is also the final album that will ever be released by Stray From The Path. This album is Clockworked. Yeah, man. So this really just like kind of came out of nowhere. Not just the announcement of the album, because that was only with a couple days of a heads up, but also the news that this is the final album to ever be released by the band. It was all like, you know, this like one this one punch, man. You ever watch that show? This one punch that just kind of like shook certain sectors of the scene, because again, we didn't see this coming. And then the album didn't even drop at midnight on Spotify, so it kind of created like some, I guess, like some bit of hysteria of like, is the album even coming out? Like, what's happening? I don't know when the album actually released. I just know that I went to sleep and it wasn't there, and then I woke up and it was. Stray From The Path, I think there's a much bigger story to tell about this band, and it would require more time than what I have right now to record this episode with. The most important thing that I can say about Stray From The Path is in the 20 plus years that they have been, you know, like a very big part of hardcore, they never, ever once, no pun intended, strayed from who they are. And the like the very politically charged nature of this band and their ideals, they have always remained true to that. They have never, ever once, you know, stepped away from like what has brought them to this point and what has made them who they are. And I think if nothing else, that is going to be the lasting legacy of this band. They stayed true to themselves to the very end. And that is so, so, so fucking respectable. And I'll give you all an example from Clockwork of this band staying true to the very end. And I think this is probably like the most talked about lyric from the album so far in the past week. And it's off of Can I Have Your Autograph? And for context purposes, there was a photo shared on Instagram last year of David Draiman, who is the vocalist of Disturbed, signing an Israeli bomb that would be used in the ongoing genocide and the killing of innocents. And one of the lines in Can I Have Your Autograph, it's Drew York just yelling out, "You put your name on that bomb, I put a target on your fucking back." And I genuinely, like, get chills from that moment in the song, because you know that it's not performative and it's not a case of a band, like, using some buzzwords or using a, like, an ongoing real-life event just to try to, like, you know, put some attention on themselves. Stray From The Path is doing this because they care and because they give a fuck, and these are things that they very strongly believe in, and they're not afraid to be outspoken in this manner. And when I look at the rest of the album and I listen to it front to back multiple times now, it's very weird, like the feeling that I get, because it's like I have never loved and appreciated an album by Stray From The Path to this extent before. And it's a combination of the album just genuinely being like really fucking good and really great and even perfect all around, but then also there is like, and I'm saying this for lack of a better way of phrasing it, there is this additional aura to this record because of the knowledge that it is the final one by this band. And it's like that I'm listening to these songs and it's like I'm never gonna hear, you know, Drew York and Craig Reynolds and everybody else involved in the project in this environment and this setting ever again. So it's like you know how like you're about to leave school, like maybe it's your last day of like your senior year of high school, senior year of college, whatever it might be. And you walk around the campus and you're like, this is my last time seeing this room. This is my last time seeing this certain like walkway. This is my last time doing this specific action. That's kind of what it felt like listening to Clockwork. And, you know, I'm making it through songs like Kubrick Stare, Shot Caller, Fuck Them All to Hell. And it's like, in my mind, there are like two different sections. And one section is just like, fuck yeah, this is awesome. And the other section's like, oh man, this is the last time though. And it's a very strange feeling. I don't think I've had a similar feeling or a vibe with an album so far this year, separate from Clockwork. And that makes this like one of just, I guess, the most bittersweet listening experiences of the year so far for myself. And maybe it just is the most bittersweet. That's probably like the most apropos way for me to, you know, express these things to you guys. There are two feature spots on this album. One is from Florent from Landmarks. He is on the title track Clockwork. And then later on, Jeffrey from Poison the Whale is on Bodies in the Dark. I really admire how these two songs and the feature spots that are involved with them are kind of morphed to the vocalists that are here. So like Clockwork and Florence specific feature spot, it has like a really nice rhythm and groove to it, almost like a rapping verse in a way. And you know, you can hear the influence of him being able to take what he's doing with Landmarks and apply it to this track and just have it be like a really fitting part of what Straight From The Path is doing on here. And then with Jeffrey's spot in Bodies in the Dark, it's very ominous and brooding and creepy, and it does have like this Poison the Whale flair to what he's doing. And I've always said before, like, those are my favorite feature spots on albums. Like, when you can tell that somebody is being brought into a project to do what it is that they're already doing really, really well, and not necessarily just, you know, be another voice, another lifeless and characterless voice on a track. Florent and Jeffrey delivered some of the best feature spots I have heard all year so far, and they ended up becoming like big parts of why this album worked out, beyond just this being the final time we're gonna get an album by Straight From The Path. And even just like saying that out loud a couple times now, it still feels like really surreal and out of nowhere. Like, this is really the end as far as like new music by the band goes. It's not the official end of the band as we know it, because they do still have some shows to play for the rest of this year. But then after 2025, that is it altogether. No more albums, no more shows, no more tours. Everybody from Straight From The Path just goes into their own different directions. And I think it's really fucking sick that a band who is this storied and this important to the scene were able to like decide collectively on their own that this was it, and be able to go out on their own terms and be able to decide for themselves when it was the right time to call it a career. And you know, given just how much Straight From The Path has meant to the scene up to now, there's gonna be a void. It will feel like there is this empty spot in the heart of hardcore music, because there will be. There is no replacing Straight From The Path. There is no ever trying to find another Straight From The Path. This band was and forever will be a one of one. And I would hope that, you know, the sentimental value of this album is not just extended to the people who have been fans of the band already, but also people who are coming on board for the first time. And in a weird way, Clockwork does end up becoming like a very good entry point for the band. So if you are somebody who, you know, maybe you've never heard of Straight From The Path before, or maybe you've like heard some songs here and there, but now that this is the end, you want to be able to get into this band fully, there's nothing wrong with starting with Clockwork and like working your way backwards. And I think Clockwork being as accessible as it is for the overall sound of Straight From The Path it does lend to itself as far as, again, being that entry point album, a very like oxymoronic entry point album, because again, it is the final one ever by the band. And they went out on the strongest note possible, and in my mind, the best album that they have ever released, and it is going to end up being one of the most important and crucial albums of the year for 2025, and an album that everybody in the scene, no matter what your background is, no matter what type of specific music in the scene that you listen to, I think every single person needs to listen to Clockwork because of the impact that it is going to have, and because this is the farewell to a band that, again, really, really made an impact on the scene at large. And there will, again, never be a such thing as replacing Straight From The Path. Straight From The Path is eternal. Straight From The Path is everlasting. Straight From The Path is forever. And that's it. That was every album and single for the week for me to review. And I'm pretty sure that now, heading into the summer, we are getting into a very hectic and busy stretch of releases. And as always, I will really try and do my very best to, you know, remain consistent with the podcast and be here every week and tell you guys all the ups and downs, the in-betweens of everything that is happening in the scene, everything with releases and news and all that good shit. And yeah, I don't think that I've like really been able to have a consistent stretch and a stretch where I really feel like I'm in my element for quite a while now, definitely well over a year. But I feel like there's potential now. I feel like there is promise, and I really, really want to, you know, be here every week and be consistent again and get into that rhythm and that groove and that structure and routine. Because when I am in that routine, I really do feel like I am the best that I can be as a reviewer, as a podcaster, and just as like a personality, I guess, when it comes to music and the scene and all that stuff. I'm rambling now, I'm waffling, I don't really know what I'm saying anymore, so I will get out of here now and stop while I'm ahead. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, I appreciate all of you, I love all of you. Oh shit, I forgot, I was supposed to talk about fucking basketball. Yo, Knicks, why the fuck am I now watching the Pacers tonight in game one against the Thunder? Why? What the fuck happened? I don't have it in me to crash out right now, guys. I really gotta get out of here. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will talk to y'all when I talk to y'all. Thank you.